Hey everybody, it's Dr. Drew Podcast, and we get to Justin Sylvester today from Daily Pop on E! And Just the Sip. And he and I get into everything, race, gender, sexuality. It's a really interesting conversation. Stay with it. And let me remind you that more than 37 million Americans are affected by migraine. The condition impacts one in every five women and 10% of school-age children. It can begin at any age, usually peaking in your 30s. Migraine attacks include serious and debilitating symptoms such as nausea, difficulty concentrating, thinking clearly, and sensitivity to light, sound, or odors. There are resources available to help you manage migraine symptoms. Talk to your physician about treatment options and talk to your employer about reasonable workplace accommodations. For more information, visit womeningovernment.org. And now let's get on with the show. And hey, everybody, welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Keep the winds in the sail of the Corolla pirate ship. Be sure to click through on the banners and support the people that support the podcast. We appreciate it. I have a new thing going on. If you sign up at drdrew.tv, you will get an email blast that will allow you to jump to the head of the line when I do a live streaming show on the weekends where I just answer questions. And it's just live and it's streaming and it's very fun. So do check that out. Also, don't forget After Dark. It's all at Dr. Drew After Dark. Get that at drdrew.com along with This Life You Live. And everything else is there, including the Adam and Dr. Drew show and the AM 790 KBC program. And today it's Justin Sylvester, man. Welcome. Finally, we did this.
I know,
finally. We've been trying to do this for like a year.
Justin, but I'm on the wrong show. I want to be on Dr. Drew After Dark.
Oh, you want to be on that one too?
I want to talk. How nasty does it get on Dr. Drew After Dark?
It's not nasty. It's we watch horrible videos. It's a spinoff of Your Mom's House. And we talk and we just – they send me horrible videos and they just try to shame me.
Oh, wow.
They try to make me uncomfortable and ashamed.
That's the nature
of that show.
I thought you were taking over for Talk Sex with Sue Johansson.
No. Oh man. Is she still doing that?
No. I'm so sad about it.
I went up to Canada and saw her and did it with her.
Wow.
I mean, did the show with her. It was the strangest experience. They do it. They record it. It was a TV show, and they recorded it in the Toronto Blue Jays like booth, for broadcasting the game. They commandeer their booth and sort of turn the cameras inward, and you're in the Toronto Blue Jays stadium, and they bring you up beforehand to meet in like a conference room, and it's just these three little old ladies talking about going to college, and they had scones out. It was the funniest thing
ever. Dude, she's a national treasure. She's the biggest thing to come out of Canada next to Shania Twain. Like, I'm telling you, that's how I learned about sex.
Really?
My mother never talked to me about anything. My father didn't say, this is the birds and the bees.
What's the matter? You didn't listen to Love Line? What the hell?
But, you know, yeah. Once I got to college, I ended up with Love Line and Delilah. I was going back and forth.
Good. All right, excellent. I'm good. And so I got to know her pretty well. She's lovely, and her claim to fame was she actually is one of the first. She was an RN, and she set up some of the first STD clinics in schools in the history of Canada. And so she was doing all this really public health stuff way before the TV stuff started.
Wow.
Yeah, very interesting woman. So let me talk about Justin. Justin is weekdays at noon on E! Exclamation point. You also can find him on Twitter at The Lady Sitter and Twitter as well. New episodes Wednesday on E! News YouTube channel. Tell me about that. Just the Sip.
Oh, yeah. I have Just the Sip is my long form show.
Didn't we do that? Didn't I do that with you?
You did it with me.
Yeah.
And you sit down. We have an hour long conversation and it comes on YouTube every Wednesday, and then the unedited version goes on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, so you can hear the raw, uncut version on Wednesdays.
Do you pull people off of the E! Show onto that?
Yes.
Yeah.
But now people are hearing about it and hitting me up in my DMs to come on the show because they want to tell their sides of the story.
Well, it says Daily Pop is noon on E! Why I'm always there at like 10 o'clock?
Because 12 o'clock, 12, Eastern 11 time. Central, Eastern, yeah.
Okay. So you do it really, it's 9 o'clock or something, right?
It's really 9 o'clock.
On the Pacific.
Yeah.
Okay. Because whenever I've done it with you, that's where.
You have to get there at the ass crack of dawn.
No. Because I got to get out of there by 10 o'clock. I have a radio show after that. I knew I wasn't there at noon. These guys have great guests, Jared Leto, Juliana Huff, Eva Longoria, everybody. Do you guys interview everybody?
Everybody. Everybody comes through.
And your co-hosts?
So awesome. Carissa Culliner and Morgan Stewart and. We just have a good time. It's like the laid-back daytime show. If you don't want to fight like The View and you don't want to like sit and watch Michael Strahan for 4 hours, you can come and watch us.
Gary's going to turn your mic around, I think. There we go.
Oh, thank you, Gary.
It's all good. I'm doing a lot of umming today, which is weird. I just normally don't do that. But I am surprised. I didn't know your previous history with Kyle Richards and Real Housewives. I had no idea. I just know you from when we've encountered each other over at E. Beverly Hills Nannies. Tell me more about all this.
Oh, by the way,
congratulations on LSU last weekend.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Best birthday gift of my life.
When's your birthday?
I turned 33 on Saturday.
My kids turned 27 on Monday.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So on the LSU-Alabama game, actually last Saturday, I turned 33 and it
was a great game.
Great game. I was
46-41.
46-41. I was literally rehearsing for the People's Choice Awards.
Oh.
And nice. Watching the game while I was rehearsing, people were so upset with me. So upset with me, but I could miss it. But yeah, I'm from Louisiana and I met this woman named Allie Landry.
I know Allie very well.
Allie Landry came into a restaurant that I was working at when I was 17 years old and was like, you need to move to Los Angeles. And here's my phone number. And whenever you're ready to move, please let me know. And then I saw her again a few years later when I was 20 and she said the same thing. So when I moved.
I screwed her life up. I was predicted she was going to marry a Mario Lopez and then she did, or almost did, or whatever happened there. I was like, sorry, guys. I thought that was going to work out.
No. But she's happy now. And
yeah. And so is he. I mean, and they're sure they harbor no ill whatever.
Yeah. But she was like, let me know when you want to come. And I called her when I got here and she took me in for a month and introduced me to Kyle Richards.
Wow. How nice of her. It's
crazy.
Really cool. She's a pretty cool person.
She's an unbelievable person. Yeah. And Kyle Richards was like, hey, I need an assistant for 3 months. And I was like, great. And then 3 months turned into 5 years and then 5 years turned into a spinoff show. And then I ended up at E.
Those are the Beverly Hills Nannies with the spinoff.
Yeah. And it was nuts. Nuts.
So talk about being on a reality show.
It's not for me.
You don't like producers going, hey, Kyle just said she's thinking about firing you. I know you've been there 5 years, but I just heard her say that you just have sucked all 5 years. What do you think?
Right?
Let's do a mock interview. Right. No, let's do a fly. What do they call them? Flybys. What do they call those interviews they're doing all of, on the flies? Let's do an OTF.
Yeah,
ready?
Yeah.
Kyle says you're horrible. OTF. Here we go.
I'm like, what? She said what? She said who? No, reality TV, I'm telling you right now, people think it's so easy. And it is not easy at all. And watching her do that for 5 seasons right behind her and then going on with her being her friend and, you know, her confidant for 5 more seasons after that, I just don't know how they do it.
What's hard about it for people that have not been in front of those cameras?
First of all, it's not exactly what you think it is. Like when you see an episode of a reality show, that's a week of filming, sometimes even 2 weeks of filming. And what happens is you have to go through the drama for 5 months. You have to talk about the drama in your interviews for 2 months after that. And then once you get over everything with these people at a finale party, you have to relive it while it plays on TV and see what the other women say about you and get all in your emotions again.
But there's an element that's sort of difficult to pin down where the producers screw with things.
Yes.
Because they'll say things like, hey, there's not a lot happening this season. If you guys want to get another season, I just talked to the network and they're saying you're on the ropes. So let's heat it up. By the way, Lisa Rinna just said, I talked to Lisa yesterday. She said, you're fat.
There's
something crazy like that.
No. What they do is, and this is interesting because I was a reality TV producer. Actually,
do you watch Unreal?
I love Unreal.
Is that not exactly how it works?
It's exactly how it works. There's just one other thing that happens, which is, once you tell one woman or one other castmate something, it's like lighting a fire.
Yeah.
Because that person will tell someone else. And by the time it gets to the actual person that the other person said about, the story has become bigger than what it's supposed to be.
Of course. Like telephone.
Telephone. And then you add in a Chardonnay.
And again, right. You add alcohol. and the producers do also heat it up. They throw
it all at you.
So in Celebrity Rehab, they started that nonsense. And I was like, get the fuck away from my patients. Do not get near them. And it got to the point where I was furious about it because these are sick people and you're screwing with sick people.
But how did you find out?
I just sort of saw – I was sitting in the control room sometimes and see what's going on with people and I'd see the producers talk to them. I'm like, I'd dive into the room like, get out of here. And it got to the point where I would say, okay, we can do this season. Nobody speaks to the patients under any circumstances. Not one word. Everyone's blind to the patient. And me, you can ask me five questions. How's the patient doing? What's the discharge plan? How much is it going to cost? What's the family therapy? What's the aftercare plan? That's it. One more thing. I'm walking the hell off the state. I'm walking off.
Has there ever been someone who they really wanted you to get and the person was willing to do it, but you thought they weren't in the frame of mind to go into the show?
Oh, yeah. But more times, there were people that would have made a great candidate for treatment, and the psychological screening, you must know this. The screening instruments they use to determine if somebody's okay to be on a reality show are worthless. I mean worthless.
Horrible.
Essentially, are you actively psychotic and actively suicidal? That's about all they ask. Now, drug addicts, when they're thinking about treatment, are often suicidal. So there was a lot of suicidal people around out there. I'm like, get her in here. She'd be perfect. You can't. I decide who I can treat.
Oh, they didn't want the liability.
I decide who's appropriate for the program. Not you idiots with your stupid screening programs. I'll tell you if there's a – and then they would send me extremely difficult patients that never should have been in.
Yeah.
Because their screening instruments were terrible. Terrible. I was very upset about that.
I love that show.
I mean, unfortunately, there's – there's footage of me yelling at the camera, like using it like a walkie-talkie. Like, I can't believe you gave me that. This is ridiculous. And then this other one you wouldn't give me. Come on.
That should have been in your slideshow for your birthday. Footage?
I know. Unfortunately, I don't. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Would you ever resurrect that show?
Sure. I talked to somebody about about it.
I'm like, I don't know why you guys hadn't done it. It was so
groundbreaking. It's expensive. Because the celebrities all get paid, and they have to get aftercare, and that's expensive. And I do it again in a millisecond.
Damn.
And I got plenty of people I'm thinking of that would be great.
Do you ever watch Intervention?
Uh-huh. Like those guys. Love those guys.
I didn't. There were so many things that I guess I learned a lot from TV because my family didn't talk about anything. We swept everything under the rug. It's like a family curse.
Louisiana,
mm-hmm. Black family. Like most African American families do that.
We'll talk about it at the church.
Yeah. And what happens in our house stays in our house. And once we go to Sunday, we're going to pray it away and we're not going to talk about it again.
Right.
And identifying, things that I saw in friends and family members from that show kind of sort of gave me the tools to figure out how to respond and how to really work through those thoughts about those people. So it's crazy how reality TV kind of really is.
Oh, yeah.
I know people say it's trash, but at the same time, it taught me so much.
So the therapeutic reality shows, some of them, are opportunities to learn things. Some of them you get kind of a skewed view of stuff. You don't really – because treatment is not that interesting.
Yeah.
The drama that goes on amongst and between people and the struggles and it can make people – make better television, right? Like one of the criticisms we used to get at Celebrity Rehab was where's the treatment? It's like, they didn't put that on TV. You're watching 30 minutes of television and it's not – the treatment is boring. It's slow. It's quiet. Attuning to another person and them talking quietly about their experiences. It's not reality television.
What's the one reality show you wish would have never been made from a psychological standpoint?
In terms of having done harm.
Let's tease that.
Okay. We're going to tease that. I'm going to talk to you for a second about Blinkist, everybody. You hear me talk about them all the time. They're unique. It works on your phone, with your tablet, your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down to just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Either one, whichever you want. Tons of great books. Becoming by Michelle Obama. Fire and Fury, Inside the White House by Michael Wolff. And you just get the best. Right, listen, I don't know about you, but I love reading nonfiction books. They take a long time, mm-hmm. and this is an efficient way to do it. You distill it down to just a few minutes, the key important points, 15 minutes. And with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to their massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, all for one low price. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Drew to try it for free for 7 days. Crazy. And then get 25% off your new subscription when you do sign up. That is Blinkist, BLINKIST.com/Drew, DREW, to start your free 7-day trial. And then also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/Drew. Yeah, reality TV is an interesting phenomenon, human phenomenon, cultural phenomenon. And in terms of things that should not have been made.
Why do you think of that?
Yeah.
I wish somebody would do a reality show about people who have left a reality show and the addiction to that.
I want to do – I've said forever we should – I think I told you about this. We should do after reality.
It's
– like where is the cast of Big Brother 1?
For sure.
Do you remember George the Chicken Man left his family, left his world, came out to Hollywood. He thought he was going to be a big star. Nobody knew what reality meant back then either.
No.
And they all thought they were like big stars and they just rolled on to the next show, left these guys behind. Nothing ever happened. I mean none of them.
Yeah, but those people are still doing – they're on the circuit because there
are
the Survivor conventions. There's those Big Brother conventions. So you see those people pop up for $5,000 here, $2,000 there.
I'd love to see what's going on with that.
No, you have to see it because it's so crazy.
I've never heard of these conventions you're talking about.
No, I'm telling you, they're like in Poughkeepsie and like there's one in like, you know, Kissimmee, St. Cloud. But there is this moment where, you know, I've seen it before where someone gets off of a reality show, a season or two goes by and they try so hard to get back on that reality show because they miss that instant gratification and that fame.
Right. So when people talk about – you talk to famous people all the time. So when people talk about – I did that addiction to fame thing for True Stories. And what I was saying, like people that are famous, they generally find fame better. Generally, it's losing the fame they freak out about.
I would rather not have it.
Right.
Ever.
And so the losing it gets people all upset and therefore they're willing to do things that maybe expose them to whatever and shame. And then sometimes there's parts of themselves they don't want to share with the world and all of a sudden they're shared and that, oh my God, that's going to cause me to lose my fame. And they get preoccupied with losing their position. Not that it's so hard to be famous. What's so hard about it?
No. It's losing it. But I also wonder look. I think about Lindsay Lohan all the time.
Yeah.
And the
That's
fact
not
that.
Good.
No, I just feel.
Well, let's talk about her.
No, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. To have that much talent and to be that beautiful.
Okay, let's start with that. So we agree. I mean, Parent Trap, genius. Right?
Genius.
Yeah.
Talented.
Yeah.
Can sing.
Yeah.
Was beautiful. I think what happened to her is a shame because if you think about. We all had that one friend that our parents always said, oh my God, this person brings out the worst in you.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe you're friends with that person. Yeah. Imagine if
was that
one
said
girlfriend.
About you, Justin?
No.
Your mom said that about somebody.
No,
okay,
you should always say that about somebody else. Like, that person brings out the worst in you. Imagine if that person was your mother. You know what I mean? It was like the perfect storm because she got the fame. Her mother got got sucked into the whole thing. And I don't think it was Dina's fault. I just think her mom got sucked into the fame as well. So there was no one there to guide either of them.
Well, and then Michael, whom I love, Michael Lohan, it had his issues.
Yeah.
And that was not good for Lindsay. And I think Michael would agree with that. And then Lindsay got severe addiction. And then you throw that in there and then all bets are off.
For sure.
That was addict stuff that she was getting involved with. And I had this image of her like without a limb or something because I just kept thinking she's going to really hurt herself. Thank God she didn't. I mean the fact that she left this country was probably a great thing for her.
The best thing.
Yeah.
I actually saw her last summer in Mykonos and she looked great and she looked healthy. But it just reminded me, I mean, you deal with celebrities all the time. They're surrounded by yes people. Mm-hmm. So the minute they hear no, they can find 10 other yes people around there that's going to want them in that, in that cloud, in that moment so they can be a part of that.
Right.
And that's the sad part.
Right. So the access, they're willing to sacrifice the human being to the access to the celebrity.
Amen.
Yeah. And does she have anybody trustworthy around her now? Anybody she can rely on? Or?
That's the thing. I don't know. I don't have no clue if she has anybody around her. It seems like she's doing better and she's moving on and she's like in the next phase of her life. But the thought of being that on top, being on every magazine, being in every movie, having your picture taken.
I don't think that did anything for her. I don't think she liked that. Did she?
I think she loved it.
Oh, did she? Mm.
And I think now that she doesn't have it, I think it's killing her.
Oh, well.
Killing her.
That would be the usual fame story.
That's the usual thing.
Yeah.
I've tried to get out of a Bentley and show my vagina, but no one wants to take that photo. People were paying for that one.
If you have a vagina, I think people will pay for that image. I'm just saying. I think that would be kind of intriguing.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you know, like back in the day, they were like, there was all these, like, they were doing all
these different
things.
It was different. It was before social media. They were the preoccupation before social media.
Paris, Lindsay, Brittany, that was it.
That was it. Those two. And to some extent, what's her name, who's now just completely out of
Nicole Richie.
Nicole. Yeah.
Nicole was in it, but Nicole got out of it because Nicole had had that moment with DJ AM.
Oh, really? Is that what got her?
So Nicole checked herself out of that real quick.
Because I would AM was one of my – I really had kind of – we weren't friends, but he was a dear relationship for me.
Yeah.
And I would use him all the time to help get people sober.
Yeah.
He was extremely effective. And he was always being of service to people all the time. That's all he did.
I heard he was an unbelievable person.
Oh, yeah.
But Nicole Richie, I mean, I know this is sad to say, but sometimes losing somebody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really turns shit around
for you. Oh, yeah.
And especially puts it in perspective.
Well, especially somebody like AMs. The other addicts who saw him go out, that was so stunning to everybody.
Yeah.
Because this was a wonderful recovery. And all of a sudden he's out and he's dying. Oh my God, there were so many horrors. You don't know, there were so many horrors to his story. So you got in a plane accident, you got burned.
Survived.
You survived, was appropriately put on pain medicine and anxiety medicine because he had PTSD. Then it was the middle of the opiate epidemic and he had doctors going, why aren't you taking more of these things? I'm telling you, I'm your doctor. Don't listen to those people trying to brainwash you that you need to get off these things.
Yeah.
Literally, I was dealing with that. Like his lifetime, his therapist for many years, she would bring in recovering people. They got him off everything. He was doing well. And literally his doctor would go, what are you doing? You're letting these people brainwash you. I'm the doctor. Take these medicines.
That's
crazy. You tell that to a drug addict, are you effing kidding me? It's on at that point. And the last time they did that to him and put him back on benzodiazepine and opiates, lethal combination, went out on cocaine and that was that.
My God. It's really scary.
Oh, well, then I can't even tell you how horrible that all was. I was in the – Jeff Conway's dead because of it. Mike Starr is dead because of it. People now are kind of understanding, oh, I see.
Yeah.
Mike Starr called me. We worked so hard getting him sober. It was a miracle. He was a really bad drug addict. Remember the guy from Alice in Chains?
Yeah.
He was doing great. And all of a sudden, one day me and Bob were working with him and he goes, I'm moving to Utah. We're like, oh, Mike, please don't do that. Something. When an addict does that, it's like never, something's up. He goes, look, I'm going to live at Cirque Lodge. There's a sober living there. I got to get music going again in my life. I got a band I'm going to live with. They're all sober guys. We're like, all right, it doesn't sound right, but okay, stay in touch with us. Calls me. He goes, I'm having back pain. I go, Mike, whatever you do,
don't touch it.
Don't tell a doctor. Don't tell a doctor you have back pain. 2 weeks later, dead with the pain medicine at his bedside.
I'm telling you right now, I grew up in the hood. When black people had crack issues, it was a problem. When white people started dying from opioids, it was an epidemic.
Yeah. So that was unconscionable. It was the fact that the medical community separated those two epidemics in that way. I am ashamed of my profession for them doing so. It's not okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's acknowledgement, at least in the medical community, that that was – not okay.
It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Because so we made the crack epidemic a criminal problem and the opiate epidemic,
that's a crisis that we need to figure out.
It is. Well, you know what it is? People are going
to
love this.
Say it, Dr. Drew. No, we're here to be honest.
It's white supremacy.
It's white privilege.
Which really is white supremacy. Which is white people looking at everything through the prism of their whiteness.
100%.
And it is a problem. You know how I really – where the scales fell from my eyes a bit. You know, I'm a white guy. How much can they really fall from my eyes? But reading Frederick Douglass's biography, he is so clear on this stuff. He is so clear. And he started going after Abraham Lincoln. I'm like, no, not Abraham Lincoln. I go, yeah, he's right.
He's right.
Not that – I always knew Abraham Lincoln was a racist.
Yeah.
But he's also a white supremacist.
You didn't realize how deep it went.
I didn't know. And so it helped me like come to terms with my own stuff and where I see it out in the world. And one of the big places was that crack epidemic.
Have you seen the Chelsea Handler documentary on Netflix?
I've not yet, but let me just finish one thing. Please, everybody, don't get put off with the term white supremacy. I'm not talking about skinheads.
No.
I'm talking about like white privilege doesn't quite characterize it. It's white It's European exceptionalism or something.
It's your white. Yeah. I mean, white privilege is the best thing. I mean, I don't know.
That's too soft.
It's white privilege plus.
Yeah. Okay. Privilege plus. So go ahead. What's her name?
Chelsea Handler. Yeah. Have you seen the Chelsea Handler, Gary? Have you seen the Chelsea Handler?
I've only seen a few clips of it. I haven't watched it all the way through.
You've got to watch it all the way through.
Copy that.
And I don't know if Chelsea Handler gets the recognition that she deserves for not only tackling something that is taboo in her community, but sticking with it, promoting it, and not being afraid for people to call her out on her own white privilege while trying to learn about it.
Oh, this was hi Chelsea, it's privilege or whatever. Yeah,
it's called. I can't. Gail, can you look up what it's called? It's unreal.
Okay, I'll watch it.
I had to watch it twice.
Okay.
Because it was so good, and I couldn't believe how deep she went through it and how she really let people call her ass out.
Oh, sure.
About her own white privilege.
You
and she said,
to.
I got it. Like,
you
understand
have to.
It.
You can't do it to yourself very well.
Hello, privilege. It's me, Chelsea.
Yes. Hello, privilege. Yeah. Hello, privilege. It's me, Chelsea. Yeah. Unbelievable documentary.
Okay. I'll watch it. Done and done. Yeah. I've gotten I've gotten very interested in Reconstruction because of this, because I really believe, and this is, it must have affected your family been here for a long time?
My family's been here for a minute.
Yeah. Is Reconstruction was such a catastrophe. I feel like, and again, through the eyes of Frederick Douglass, who almost thought it was worse than slavery itself, the whole Reconstruction period was such a catastrophe.
It's so crazy. But
and so I'm reading a bunch about it right now. I just can't get enough because I'm an idiot. You know what I mean?
Where'd you grow up?
In Southern California.
You see, you didn't know.
I did not know. Although I had lots of patients from Mississippi, and there was a big exodus into this area in like the early part of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And I had loads and loads of patients from the South, particularly Mississippi, and but never understood.
But it's, you know, living there, you get this sense of like – and it's not until you leave it that you realize what you had been living through for the last like 22 years. I lived in South Louisiana for 22 years. The little town that I grew up in was amazing. But there was a railroad track and there was a black side and a white side. And one side was better than the other. And, you know, I went to a private school in junior high and high school, and my friend's parents would drop me off at the track. They wouldn't want to cross it.
Oh my God.
Because they were afraid, because it was always this thing that this neighborhood was terrible. I don't think anyone got shot in my neighborhood until I was like 16. And when I say that, I mean in the sense that everyone thought it was like this like crime infested place. Mm. But really, it wasn't that. It just was, you know,
different.
It was different. The housing was different because they didn't put any money into that side of town.
Yeah.
You know, the roads were fucked because no one, again, put money into that side of town.
But there in the South, the reality is there was active
racism.
Not strong enough word.
It was
an attempt to recreate the culture of the 19th century, you know, in the eyes of these people.
Yeah.
Where you as an African-American person have to be in a certain position relative to them. And that was just that.
Yeah.
And literally killing people to prevent them literally from going to the ballot box. Because there was – right after the war, there was a bunch of African-American representatives.
Yeah.
It was looking good. And then the Democrats took over in the Congress, and do you ever read from that period? It's there was a New York Times article last weekend, the best, most concise little review of that period of history I've ever seen. I think I took a picture of it.
Send it to me.
It was from a Harvard
professor. We'll post it on our Instagram.
And I thought, oh my God, it is so – he got it, just got it all down. It's such a complicated history, and he just got it down. Oh, I think I threw it away. Did I throw it away? Hold on here. Why all this nonsense? Nonsense. Oh, here it is. There it is. The Lost Cause Built Jim Crow, it's called. How can you
text it?
I must have your number.
Give it to me. I'll get it to you. This is amazing.
337, that you?
Yeah, that's mine. Don't say the rest of it, Dr.
Not.
Drew. Have people calling my ass at all hours of the night.
All right, it's coming to you now. All right, let me talk about our friends at Purple. Purple Mattress. Yes, lots of mattresses out there. You ever use one of these Purple mattresses? We use them.
I actually have one.
Me too. They're really good. They are really good. If you're struggling to get a good night's sleep, you must try Purple. They're like nothing else. They feel different than anything you've ever experienced. It uses a brand new material developed by an actual rocket scientist. It's not like that memory foam you're used to. It's just – You can get out of it easily. You don't. It's just perfect. It really is just a great mattress. Feels unique because it's both firm and soft. Keeps everything supported while feeling comfortable, breathable, so you're cool. And we have a 100-night risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return the mattress for a full refund. It shows up. You roll it out. And if you want to roll it back and send it out, it's free. And it is backed by a 10-year warranty. So you know you're covered. And again, as I said, free shippings and returns. You're going to love Purple, and right now for our listeners, you get a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That is in addition to the great free gifts they're offering site-wide. Just text DREW to 84888. Again, the only way to get this free pillow is to text DREW to 84888. I think I said 8488. It's 84888, so it's 84, then 3 8s. That is DREW to 84888. Message and data rates may apply. Let's take a couple calls, right? Shall we?
Let's take a call.
Let's talk to Tom. What's up? Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom. What's up?
Yes. Hello.
Hey, man. What's happening?
Oh, hey.
Yo, hey.
Drew?
Yeah, hey. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for. Okay.
That's me.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
You bet.
I've talked to you a couple times in the past on the Adamant Drew show. You had referred me to Alan on, and that was a great referral.
Good for you, man.
I'm calling for my personal. You're my personal physician, so I'm calling you.
All right.
But I had a question. I'm 52, and a couple of things. One's about cholesterol, but I was recommended to me to get a shingles vaccine.
Who recommended?
I had never heard of that.
Who recommended that?
The Terry Bradshaw commercial.
Oh, that's where you saw it was in Terry Bradshaw commercial?
Don't listen to shit Terry Bradshaw says.
No, actually, my father was talking about it, and he said, at my age, I should be getting that done.
You're a bit young. You're a bit young. Really, 60, 65 is when we really start talking about it. It's a two-part vaccine called Shingrix. I've had it. It's a pretty miserable vaccine. Hang on. I got a mouthful of food. I got to eat something.
Don't trust Terry Bradshaw.
Why?
Don't ever trust Terry Bradshaw.
Why?
Who cares why? The conviction with which you said it was so brilliant.
You ever met Terry?
I've met Terry.
Nicest guy in the world, right?
I've met Terry.
In the world.
But Terry be slinging shit he don't believe in, okay? You know, and it's like, you know, Terry for Zelle jams. I'm like, Terry, you don't even take no Zelle jams. Terry.
Fair enough. But shingles vaccine is excellent. It's a new vaccine. It's a two-parter. It's pretty powerful. It kind of screws you up for the weekend. Again, I've had it. Shingles is a horrible illness. It's a painful, horrible rash. I used to have to deal with chronic pain syndromes from it. It's an awful thing. And you can prevent it completely. So you can get it if you want, but you're a little young, and it's up to you. What's your other question?
So my other question has to do with my cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been following Vinny Tortorich, no grain, no sugar,
cool.
Mm-hmm. For a couple of years now, and I happened to drop about 20 pounds doing that.
See?
Doing nothing else.
Nice.
However, my cholesterol did pick up a bit, of course, my cardiologist wants to put me on statins. But
I would do it. I'm on a statin. Yeah. If your LDL is not coming under control, that is clearly important to get that LDL below 100. Clearly.
Okay.
I'm having a follow-up cardiac scan.
I did have a CAT scan, and my calcium score was zero.
Beautiful. That's awesome. I'm having my follow-up in January.
Okay. And then there's no family history of heart disease of any kind.
Yeah, but
either.
Tom, it's clear.
You still think I should do that?
I do think you should if you can't get that LDL. If your HDL is, you know, 40, 50, and you can't get that LDL below 100, it's pretty clear that not only are you going to really reduce the risk of heart disease later in life, which you can come on later, but also cerebrovascular disease and dementia. You don't want any of that stuff. You don't want it. I mean, you know, all that southern food. You worry about your stuff?
Look, I'm not worried about anything. I'm just trying to get on. I'm just trying to get on that mesothelioma lawsuit. I'm just trying to jump on that. I tried the vaginal mesh one, but they wouldn't let me on that one.
Once again, you've got a vagina. This is amazing. This is amazing.
You know what? This is my biggest pet peeve. Every time I see a commercial and it's like, you should take this medication. And then it's like, at the end, don't take if you're allergic to this medication. Yeah. And it's like, how do I know if I'm allergic to that goddamn medication?
Everything they say that's a qualifier at the end of the commercial is attorney speak. It's nothing there except to say, we said it. We told you. It's nothing real. There's nothing that can change anything.
Look, I am a 32-year-old gay man. Massive diarrhea is fine with me. I will lose some weight. I'll be ready for Halloween. Like, I'm like, that is not turning me off.
Yeah, but that greasy diarrhea, they may not be so fun. They don't say big diarrhea. They say greasy diarrhea.
Oh, my God.
That's the tough part.
Those commercials kill me.
So, yeah. So, you're going to help me just the way Chelsea gets called out. You're going to help and call me out with stuff. Don't see things I should see in the world, like what a crack.
But you're aware. That's the thing.
I'm trying.
We just need people to be aware that things aren't the same.
Well, I think we need new language a bit because a lot of white people go, well, I don't see a lot of racism. I don't see it because they're looking for racism, you know, writ large,
for sure.
And they don't think about this other thing, which is a perspective that makes it's hard. You have to step outside of themselves to get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's different.
But it's also like, you know, I deal with a lot of people in the LGBTQ community.
Same phenomenon going on. Yeah.
Because sometimes the L's and the G's don't get along and the G's look at the T's they don't. It's like a whole thing. And for me, there's two things I always say.
The G's and the T's. And
the G's and the T's. Like everybody is at each other's throats at some point in life. And you know, it's very interesting because a lot of times when we talk about, you know, LGBTQ things and people being proud and loud and coming out of the closet, like we're talking about people in LA and New York. Mm. What about the guy in Jackson, Mississippi, who still is in that closet door?
Right.
Just because it's good for here doesn't mean it's good there.
We have to, again, be very careful because, for instance, out here in the woke areas, coming out is sort of like, well, why would you even do that? It's like coming out for heterosexuality. Why'd you bother? But if you're out there, it could be a whole thing.
It could be dangerous.
Yeah.
It could be life-threatening. And, you know, going through that and living through that and knowing people who are still living in that, it just – I get so upset when people talk about it. Like it's like this –
That's a whole other thing we got to deal with in this country is how we're all so different in different regions now. It's really crazy.
But we need to have that conversation.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
It needs to happen. And I do love that celebrities are just coming out and being proud. But I also think there are some people who just jump on the letter train for publicity.
Really?
There I said it.
Really? Who?
I'm just saying.
Who?
And let me let you know something. For all you celebrities who are jumping on the letter train, we put the cue in there for y'all's asses. The questioning is for y'all who want to jump on the train. Don't jump on the L. Don't even jump on the B.
I say it's all the ones that want to jump on the L train.
It's all the ones who want to be lesbians and bisexuals. And
but it's not men, is it?
No, it's not
the women.
No, it's the women. Because men still can't even come out as questioning, much less bi, much less gay. Mm. You know what I mean?
Well, you're either hiding or not.
Yeah, no.
right.
It's either one or the other.
Yeah, it's a little clearer.
It's a little clearer, but a lot of the young girls and like, you know, I feel bad because they are coming out and they're saying, oh my God, yeah, I'm a lesbian, I'm bisexual.
Okay, you're talking about Kristen Stewart.
No, Kristen Stewart. I think Kristen Stewart is right on that spectrum. Oh,
but she talks about it as being so cool. I heard her on Stern the other day and I was like, is she just doing that to be cool?
No, she is. Actually, she has found herself.
Okay, good.
This woman has found exactly who she was. She knew who she was. She just found the courage to explain it.
All right, that's
good. I think for her, she's found it. She's found a way to be her without labeling herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she's put herself, that was
her thing. Yeah.
That's her thing.
Yeah.
She is fluid.
No, and by the way, that's very current. That's a very
– very current.
Yeah, it's a very like acceptable – way to be in her amongst her peers and age group and stuff.
I'm talking
sort of
about
the
ones
target.
Who come out with a single and they're like, I'm not fully straight. Oh. And I'm like, oh, bitch, here we go.
Right.
Oh, here we go. You again. And I just get upset because people see that and it's like, okay, if you guys are going to come out now, where were you when we were struggling to get Prop 8 done? Where were you guys when we were looking to adopt kids? Where were you guys when we were all fighting in the street and walking for, you know, HIV and AIDS medications to be affordable and to be readily available?
Oh, dude, I worked – the reason I got on radio was because of HIV.
I remember
AIDS,
you told me.
Because of AIDS. And then I go karaoke at Stonewall all the time. And Stonewall is the place in New York City where they – in Greenwich Village where they stood up to the police during a vice raid.
50 years ago.
Yeah, and it's quite an interesting place to stand on that ground.
Let me ask you this question. Two questions.
Yeah.
Do you have a large gay audience, do you know?
I don't know about large, but I have some.
You have some. I heard there's like this new strand of HIV, the first one they found in since everything hit.
There is a new strand, yeah.
Yeah, should we?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't yet. Not yet. It just means that we know that the virus is very good at changing itself.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's changing enough that it's like, ooh, that seems to be a new thing it's doing. But I don't know that it's going to change treatment or anything else.
People's PrEP
going to work?
The Truvada,
I've not heard any evidence that it's not. I would think I would know that if there was any worry about that.
Yeah.
Now, I'll let you know if I hear anything.
That's a whole another phone call. That's a whole
another.
Yeah,
you call me. If you hear anything, call me because I'm a big believer in PrEP. I do think people need to still use condoms. There's a lot of syphilis and stuff going around.
But that's the problem.
I know.
People aren't using the condoms.
I know. But they wouldn't anyway. You know what I mean? I don't blame PrEP for that. We're talking about pre-exposure prophylaxis, HIV, and are you going to blame it?
I know. I live in West Hollywood, and I went to CVS to pick up some prescriptions and groceries and stuff. And I went up to the pharmacy, and I gave the lady a box of condoms, and she was like, like literally like, wow, no one's bought any of those in a very long time.
Wow.
And I was like, wow.
That's not good.
That is crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of why I've wanted to do a Loveline type thing is because I feel like people are so rarely screwed up with their sexual behaviors. It's kind of my original intent with Loveline was a medical show about the biology of sexuality.
Yeah.
That was my intent. HIV and AIDS motivated me. I had tons of AIDS patients. Did that for about 10 years. Lots of AIDS. And it was one of the darkest, saddest periods. There's no one left to remember it. And it was horrible.
Wow.
Horrible. Like, so sad. I can't even tell you. Occasionally, you see some TV that kind of gets at it a little bit. The deuce got at it a bit. And it's just beyond awful.
Yeah.
And it motivated me to get on the radio and start talking about it because no one was talking to young people at that time. And it was considered crazy to talk to a young person about a condom.
It's so crazy.
Think about that. You don't really – whenever I'm frustrated with sort of this wokeness and the current, you know, cancel culture and mm-hmm. stuff like that – every once in a while, I think, we have really moved forward, though.
Yeah.
We have really moved forward in a lot of ways, and we should take inventory on that.
Dude, we've
so many ways.
So many ways. When I came out the closet in 2009, till 10
was
years.
Was in the South?
No, I was here.
Yeah, yeah.
I had moved to LA by then. I was like living. I was comfortable. And I honestly didn't come out because I didn't want to make my mother uncomfortable. And
it's a common thing.
It's a common thing. Yeah. Like, you know, I was happy to live my life and take the torture and, you know, hear the names because I had been called them all my life. Everyone kind of sort of knew. But I kind of waited because a lot of times when you grow up in a church or in a small community, a lot of times they think, oh, what did the parents do wrong?
Oh.
And your parents often think the same thing. Like, what's
wrong?
Or
we got to fix you.
We have to fix you. And I've had my fair share of praying the gay away, you know, moments. But – you know, I came to LA and I was like, you know, now I can like finally do it because my mother will not have to see it every day or like people won't be reminded of it.
She didn't care.
I don't think she cared either.
Yeah.
I think she was more like, do your thing. And like, you know, I would never talk to my mother about sex in the first place. Mm. So I surely ain't going to talk to her about no gay sex. And she ain't going to ask me about no gay sex. But we don't talk about, you know, like something that we just don't talk about.
That's right.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah. There's lots of families that have lots of different things like that in them.
Yes. But I didn't have like a
– everybody's fine.
I didn't have a coming out party and it wasn't like this
simple
thing.
I think you may have been at the beginning of this whole thing like, why – it's like when I come out as straight, when I come out as – just get on with life.
For sure.
Yeah. Listen, my friend, it's good to see you.
It was good seeing
you. It really
is.
We got to do more stuff.
No, we have to do more stuff. This was so much fun.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about and a lot to share. And we are just scratching the surface on some important stuff here.
No, I would love to come sit here. And if you can do me a really big favor, tell your listeners to watch Daily Pop every day at 12:11 Central. Download my podcast, Just a Sip, on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your your podcast. And if you can call one of your friends and get me on that mesothelioma lawsuit, I would really, really appreciate it.
You don't want no mesothelioma. Trust me. It's a horrible illness. Oh, everybody, adulting like a mother father. Join partners and new parents Daniel Monet and Andrew Gardner every week as they navigate all things adulting. Chat with experts, celebrities, and friends. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss Adulting Like a Mother Father every week on Apple Podcasts and a Podcast One. And then, while you're at it, download Justin Sylvester's podcast. Where should we get it? Let's get it Wednesdays.
On iTunes. Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Wednesdays on Google, Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast.
Just the Sip. Any celebrities coming up?
Oh, we have Robin Givens.
Ooh, interesting.
Yes. And we talk about it all.
Oh, bring it. When's that out? Next week?
Next Wednesday.
All right, man. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much. Bye. Find me that message.
Bye, buddy.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.